Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
The studios of the Reynolds Journalism Institute and Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed, your host. Today we'll hear from journalists who have taken extraordinary measures to find out what's really going on inside North Korea. Our guests will also talk about major developments in the coming year when the Associated Press will open the Western media's first permanent bureau in the capital, Pyongyang. Joining us by telephone from South Korea's capital, Seoul, is Kwang Tae Kim, a reporter for the Yonhap News Agency. Welcome, KT.
Hi.
Hi. I'm glad you could come on the show. We'll also hear from Lee Hark Jun, who produced an award-winning undercover documentary called On the Border that was filmed on the Chinese side of the river bordering North Korea. And we'll start the show with excerpts from an interview this week with BBC's special correspondent Sue Lloyd Roberts. She was given a rare invitation to report from inside North Korea, and the newscast won a news and documentary Emmy. Here's the opening segment.
Great dictators, lines of young pioneers on parade, a distant glimpse of a remote Politburo, and goose-stepping soldiers. North Korea is so 20th century, and yet with nuclear weapons and at war with the South, a very real threat to the 21st. It was a rare opportunity to visit the most secretive country on earth. But with everything either stage managed or prohibited...
You don't like his bicycle? What's wrong with his bicycle?
Would it be possible to find out what is really going on inside the Democratic People's Republic of Korea?
I asked Sue what the incoming correspondent for the AP could expect in North Korea and what advice she would give the correspondent there.
Well, I would wish them a lot of luck because it will be very, very tricky. When I was only there officially, although I often travel undercover, this was an official visit because it's almost impossible to travel in North Korea unobserved and to work as an undercover reporter. But they did their best to show me their version of life in North Korea. I mean, I'll give you one example. One day we were driven out of Pyongyang to visit a normal village. Well, as we drove for about a couple of hours, you could see dilapidated villages on either side of the road, people wheeling bicycles that weren't even working, hardly any motorized farm vehicles. It really was pretty medieval. And then we get to this spanking new, beautiful village with all the little cottages in straight lines and smoke coming out of the chimney, almost kind of gingerbread-type cottages. And I was invited to inspect a normal village house on this collective farm. And as I walked into the house, the owner was at the entrance bristling with his medals on his breast. I couldn't help but ask him whether he wore his medals every day. But I was told, of course, this was just a random house, but the owner just happened to be wearing all his medals. And we walked in and found a table groaning with food at a time when the World Food Program and America and many other countries all around the world were sending food aid into North Korea to save tens of thousands of people from starving. This was the pretense that this was a normal agricultural worker's house. So what I would advise the correspondent taking up his or her position is that they're going to be showing you what they want you to see, and they're going to do their best to keep the real North Korea hidden.
And we said in the beginning of your program on North Korea that you asked the question, would it be possible to find out what it's really like inside North Korea? Were you able to glean enough from your visit to show people what it's really like?
What I did and what I've done often before in countries which are occupied by dictatorships or under evil regimes, is that I go into these countries and I get as many images as I can that would reflect daily life, knowing pretty well that they're never going to allow me to talk to ordinary people and it's going to be very hard to see the reality. And then I cross the border into South Korea, where I spent a week. And I probably got the truth about North Korea, ironically, in the South, which is a totally different country, very very capitalist, very advanced, very rich. But what happens is that because people's lives are such a misery in the North, about 2,000, if not more, flee North Korea every year. Only about 2,000 make it to South Korea. It's a very long and dangerous journey they have to make, crossing into China, then going through Cambodia, Laos, Thailand, before they can get into South Korea from the south. So I spoke to newly arrived refugees from the north, and I showed them the pictures that I had been allowed to take in North Korea, these model villages and model farms and model kindergartens, which I was invited to film. And they didn't know whether to laugh or to cry. They said it was so divorced from the reality of life in North Korea for the majority of the people. And that way, I was able to tell the truth.
Was there ever a point when you were able to veer off the itinerary that your minders in Pyongyang gave you?
We were put in an hotel, myself and my cameraman, on an island on a river in the middle of Pyongyang. And we discovered soon when we talked to the diplomats in the area, it was called Alcatraz by the local diplomatic community. It really was like a prison. And no one seems to work very hard in North Korea. It's not a very productive country. And even we were not required to work very hard. We'd be picked up by our minders, who incidentally slept in the same hotel along the corridor as we did, in the room along the same corridor. You know, our van would collect us every day between 10 and 1. And then we'd be dropped back for a long 3-4 hour lunch break before we were collected again until about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which meant we had a lot of time in this prison-like hotel by ourselves. And one day, my camera and I just thought we'd wander outside. And we did, and we wandered down to the riverbank, and there were a few people there selling packets of peanuts and so on the side. And one of those people was so alarmed at seeing us that we saw someone muttering into a mobile phone. And within about 10 minutes of us leaving the hotel, a police car arrived and conducted us back to the hotel. We really felt like we had been responsible for some kind of prison breakout. But what was interesting was even the local people are so afraid of engaging with foreigners without permission that it was actually local people who tipped off the hotel that we had escaped. And so it was very difficult to get off their itinerary. But you kind of have human moments when... Mm-hmm. You can question people, which I tried to do in the interviews I had with people, where they're saying to them, you don't expect me to believe that, do you? And there's an awful lot that can be conveyed by people's body language and by people's faces. They make it quite clear that they have been told to say something, that they're reading from a script.
And what were the people in North Korea telling you, the minders offered you for as interview subjects?
It could be best summed up by a marvelous book that was written just on the eve of my visit to North Korea, written by an American correspondent for the Los Angeles Times, called Nothing to Envy. You go into the schools, and the children are taught to sing this nursery rhyme that we have nothing to envy in the outside world. And it's difficult for us to get our head around, but everyone who lives in rural North Korea knows there isn't enough food. Children die regularly through malnutrition. Parents die. People are starving. And yet they're told they have nothing to envy in the outside world. They are a blessed and lucky and fortunate people. And this myth is perpetuated because it does sound incredible in the 21st century. The majority of people have no access to the World Wide Web. They have no idea what's going on in the rest of the world. All communications are totally monitored and controlled. There are no satellite dishes. And mobile phones, if they exist, are only usable within the country. So you have a country which is living on a completely different planet, if you like, on the 21st century. And so when the government tells them they are the happiest people on earth, they have nothing to compare it with.
Do you think that there might be some positive developments because of the AP Bureau in North Korea? What do you think's going to happen
Well, it does show, I suppose, a slight opening. But then, having said that before, journalists have been allowed in before, and a bit like me, they are very frustrated by how their movements are monitored. These regimes every now and again have to pretend to allow a chink of light in, have to pretend right. to engage with the outside world just to keep their critics quiet. But I'm not optimistic that it's an indication of any huge change.
Right. I just wanted to close with a few anecdotes. You said that North Korea is the most bizarre country in the world. And one of the things that you, in your report, that struck me was the interview you had with a defector who said she carried poison with her.
Yes, of course. There are a lot of prison camps in North Korea where anyone who puts a step out of line, is interned with alacrity. People say there are millions at any one time in these gulags. And I interviewed one young refugee who did flee the country, but she knew that if she were caught by the Chinese authorities, who quite often send back would-be refugees across the border back to the North Koreans, she would be punished so horribly that she carried poison with her because she said she would prefer to die than A, go back to the kind of life she was living before, a life of starvation and hopelessness, and B, the possibility that she'd be put into a gulag and physically abused.
Yeah, that's incredible. Any other, when you look back at three or four different things you saw that were the most dramatic, anything else kind of comes to mind?
The sequence I used towards the end of my film, I found really quite scary. I know it sounds crazy, but it was a child's kindergarten. And there was something really surreal about this. You went into this kindergarten and everything had been stage managed. The children had obviously been taught how to look allegedly spontaneous. They grabbed our hands and took us into their rooms, into the little theatres they had there, and they put on these plays and these musical numbers, and their faces were made up, and they had these kind of rictus grins on their faces. And it was so contrived, and the children were so young. They were like puppets performing, and that was surreal and very uncomfortable and almost scary. I mean, I think what really depressed me about the whole thing is the lie these people are being sold. They live in utter isolation. They're told lies about the outside world. It to me, it was preposterous that they could be made to believe that they have nothing to envy in the outside world, and they should be grateful to the great leader for everything he's given them. It was an appalling lie, and it's a tragic place, and one can only hope that it changes, but I really can't see any signs of change in the near future.
Well, KT, now you've reported from inside North Korea for the AP and for Yonhap. What do you think the incoming AP correspondent will be able to do any real reporting inside North Korea?
Well, the point is how much access North Korea will give AP reporters in Pyongyang. North Korea may allow AP reporters to visit some factories, state factories, and some places North Korea want to show off to outside world, but I don't think AP reporters will be able to doorstep. For example, North Korea's foreign ministry officials were directly called to foreign or other ministry officials to get their comment. And it has some significance, but the AP, the North Korea would not show the real North Korea to the outside world.
Now, are you scheduled to do any more reporting inside North Korea in the near future?
Well, South Koreans, North Korea do not allow South Korean reporters inside North Korea. Most of South Korean reporters get information on North Korea by using some defectors or calling some
right.
people inside North Korea. North Korea has cracked down mobile phones smuggled from China because they could be used to communicate with people in China and South Korea. But some people near the border area using the Chinese cell phones, so that's how they communicate with people, and that's how some reporters in South Korea get information about North Korea. And in recently I got information from an intelligence source saying that some leaflets were found in Pyongyang. One of the leaflets read, "Let's topple Kim Jong-un." the heir apparent of the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-il.
Right.
And this shows that there's some kind of dissent among people even inside Pyongyang, though there is no organized resistance group to challenge the rules of leader Kim Jong-il.
Right. So you've been filing some really significant stories about what's developments between North and South Korea, including your interview with the Seoul's top official in charge of relations with Pyongyang. What are the biggest news topics in North Korea right now?
Well, about the interview, I met the South Korea's unification minister, Yoo Woo-ik, last month, along with several other Yonhap reporters. And the minister saying that the power succession is underway in North Korea, but he says that there are some internal and external problems, though he did not elaborate, but he appears to refer some economic difficulties in North Korea. North Korea has been relying on the foreign aid to feed its people.
And is China pressuring North Korea to institute market reforms?
Well, China has pressed North Korea to embrace some reform and openness, like China did some decades ago. But North Korea has carried out some limited reforms in the past, but it failed, and it caused some inflation. North Korea also carried out some currency reform in recent years, but it also failed, and it also caused inflation and caused some public backlash.
Okay, and what about the anniversary coming up? Can you tell us a bit about what to expect will be happening in North Korea in regards to the anniversary?
Well, North Korea apparently is trying to prepare some big event for next year, which is the centennial birth of its founder, Kim Il-sung. But the thing is that the situation is not that good, because the reports indicate that North Korea still suffers from chronic food shortages. And yesterday, a South Korean private relief agency, Good Friends, said North Korea has announced to its people that it will provide electricity 24 hours a day in Pyongyang beginning January. It means that the people in Pyongyang and other areas in North Korea have suffered from lack of electricity. And North Korea could not meet some basic necessity for its people. So
everybody in Pyongyang will be doing okay, but everybody outside Pyongyang will continue to live in misery? Is that basically what you're saying?
I guess so. Some ruling elite and some top aide of Kim Jong-il will be going well, but the rest of the people, I mean the 24 million people, are likely to live in misery as they, yeah.
Do you think that things get, first of all, do you think the situation will get worse with the lack of food and the poor economy?
Well, I don't think the North Korean economy is going better anytime soon, because the lack of food and many North Korean peoples are still continuing to defect their country. Last month, eight North Korean soldiers reportedly defected to China, according to Daily NK, which is a internet-based media outlet that specializes on North Korean affairs. If it's that true, that it shows that even North Korean soldiers who are assigned to control the border areas defected to China. And it shows that the North Korean system is being crumbled
right
inside.
Let's talk a bit about your experience as a journalist and your conversations with these defectors and refugees. What's it like to talk to these people, particularly the ones who have had no contact with the outside world?
Well, many defectors who came to South Korea, they knew what South Korea was before they defected to China and South Korea. And many defectors in South Korea, when they first arrived in South Korea, they were very surprised about the development, economic development in South Korea, because they were taught by North Korean authorities that South Korea is a colony of the United States and is a very poor country, but it's not the case. But many North Korean defectors in South Korea are struggling to find a decent job in South Korea because some employers shun North Korean defectors, and in some way they are still facing some disadvantages in adjusting to South Korean society.
Right. Have you ever spoken to someone that used to be in the military in North Carolina? I mean North Korea.
Yes, I have some friends who served in the North Korean military before they defecting to South Korea, and some North Korean defectors, I mean, the former military guys, some of them claim that they have some connections inside North Korea, and they plan to carry out some anti-Kim Jong-il activities inside North Korea, uh-huh. such as destroying some statue of the Kim Il-sung in North Korea.
Okay. And now, the defectors, do most of them escape North Korea through China?
Yes, most of them escape from China, and then they travel mostly to Southeast Asian countries before they reaching South Korea. In recent weeks, a North Korean guy came to the Laos. He crossed the Laos, and he was trying to go inside the South Korean embassy in Laos, but he was captured by the Laos border securities, and then he was sent back to China. And probably he may still be in some detention facilities. I don't know about the detail of his case, but there are thousands, tens of thousands of North Koreans are believed to be in China, and most of them are trying to go to South Korea.
Right. Now, I want to get into another documentary that focused on the China-North Korea border. Before we continue our discussion, I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You can also find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to today's program on our website. This is going to be a particularly interesting website on North Korea. Please send us questions also or comments via globaljournalistprogram@gmail.com or our Facebook page. So to get another perspective on reporting about North Korea, we spoke this week with Hark Jun Lee. He's the producer of a documentary that was filmed undercover on the Chinese side of the river bordering North Korea a few years ago. It's called On the Border. The documentary sums up the human rights situation of North Korean defectors. The film follows the long journey of those who make it to freedom and some of those who don't. We asked him about his experience reporting on North Korean defectors.
북한은 취재하기도 어렵고,
in North Korea, it's hard to collect information, and even harder to produce a final story despite the efforts. So it seems the country is shrouded in mystery, especially to journalists. When I was first filming On the Border, I decided to check out all the rumors floating around. I aim to have first-hand experience with the royal family of Kim Il-sung, human trafficking, drug smuggling in the border areas, and those who defect to China. Before starting the film, I met my lawyers and did a legal review on my reporting on the border. I was aware of the risks I could face because of China's irrational law enforcement practices. However, there was no way to avoid Chinese police. I just thought I would go through the situation alone. I started the film because the newspaper company wanted me to go there. While doing preliminary research, I thought it was a very important subject to South Korean journalists. Many people ask me what surprised me most while making the film. All of my experiences in the past 4 years were embarrassing, amazing things to me.
Wow. So, KT, based on what you're hearing from defectors, and do you think that there's any chance that there could be some internal protests?
It's not clear whether there will be any internal protest, but there's been some discontent towards North Korean regime. As I said before, there was some leaflet inside in Pyongyang. One of them reads that "Let's topple Kim Jong-un." It's very rare that kind of anti-regime leaflet was found inside Pyongyang, but there's been no organized resistance in North Korea. And also some South Korean experts saying that North Korea is unlikely. There will be, South Korean experts saying that they're unlikely a kind of the Arab Spring style revolution inside North Korea, because North Korean government is controlling the North Korean people, and there's no freedom of speech and freedom of assembly inside North Korea. And yeah.
Okay. Now, do you have any relatives in North Korea?
No.
Okay. And just kind of to wrap up, what is your are you, say, positive or more positive or more negative about the future of North Korea in the coming years?
It's not clear at this point, but thing is that North Korea is likely to keep its conditions in the near future. Kim Jong-il is going to hand over his power to his youngest son, and the youngest son is unlikely to embrace reform in the near future, according to a South Korean former intelligence official, because the heir apparent, Kim Jong-un, is likely to strengthen his political power base instead of reforming the country.
Okay.
And in the past, North Korea's made some limited effort to reform, but when it failed, North Korea's held other officials accountable for the mistake, and they purged North Korean officials.
All right, thanks, Kwan. Now, yeah. we've come to the end of this week's edition of Global Journalist. I'd really like to thank you, KT, for joining us today. It's been a fascinating show, and I want to thank Sue and Lee for giving us such fascinating insight about North Korea. Our director is Joe Deutschman. Pat Akers engineered the audio. Raymond Tungakar is our lead producer, assisted by Hong Jong Kim. Thank you for listening and watching our program.